I will let you introduce all of those that are going to be participating in the agenda. The only thing that I would maybe cover just briefly for those who are from the county, back here on the back, there is a sheet that has Morgan County Committee application. The council has desires of establishing a water advisory board for Morgan County. We currently have 5 applicants who have submitted that. We certainly would like to get some more applications. I've had a few people think that today was the last day to submit those. For some reason, I'm not sure how that had gotten about, but the council had asked for it to be open until we have, we'll give everyone a sufficient opportunity. If you would so desire, please pick up an application and fill that out. Get those, any member of the council here this evening. So now I'll turn the time to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Sid. Just to make sure you're in the right place tonight, this is the meeting for the Morgan Valley Hydrogeology Water Study that we're proposing from the Division of Water Rights. And again, tonight is as much your meeting as it is ours. We're looking for input from the audience as to the scope of our proposed water study. We want to know what your issues are and what your concerns are and what we need to address in our study. As Sid said, my name is Matt Linden. I'm the assistant state engineer. I run the technical services branch of the state engineer's office. Boyd Clayton, our deputy state engineer, will be here tonight also. Jerry Olds, a state engineer, had a previous engagement, or he would have been with us tonight because this is an important item for us on our agenda, on our priority lists. Several years ago, we started noticing the rapid growth in the Morgan Valley here and how that was affecting the way we were processing water rights, how water rights were being applied for. And at that time, we started looking into some of the problems that we had up here and some of the things we knew and some of the things we didn't know. But it became pretty obvious that fairly quickly that we knew that we had to do some sort of hydrogeology study of the basin here, of the Morgan Valley fill, because we really didn't know how much physical water was in this basin, where the water was down in the deep valley fill or on the benches, and we didn't know much about the bedrock in the area. There's some fairly complex bedrock up here with some tough covering, and we didn't know how the bedrock was reacting with the alluvial valley fill and how this valley fill was recharging, whether it was from reservoirs or from canals or from snowmelt high in the mountains, and how quickly that might appear. And so it became obvious to us that we had to perform some sort of study to quantify how much water was in this basin, where the water was at, and what the interaction between the different water bodies were. And also, we were interested in seeing, you know, what kind of interaction was between different wells in the valley and try to work and try to predict what kind of influence, what kind of impairments can occur between older wells and newer wells and wells that we may be approving. And so we got together with our sister agency, the Utah Geological Survey, and asked them for a proposal to do this study. And at that time, the Weber Basin Water Conservancy District expressed a great interest in participating in this study with us, and they helped us develop an outline of what we thought should be studied, how it should be studied. We were very concerned with the valley fill. The Weber Basin was more concerned with the bedrock interaction, and so we included both of those aspects in the proposal. And so we asked for UGS for a proposal. They worked for a couple weeks on it and came up with a fairly comprehensive idea for doing a study in this valley. And at the same time, we were speaking with Sid and with Lynette Stevens and Carol Ralphs, I believe that's her name, who worked with the concerned citizens of Morgan County, who also identified some of the issues that we should be concerned with and expressed a greater interest from a larger public out here. And so Mike will give a more detailed report of what his proposal was, but the major components were of quantifying the valley fill, the alluvial valley fill, and how much water is in here and how much water can this valley fill hold. And also try to quantify how that valley fill tapers off as it goes up to the bench areas. The other thing was, how does the bedrock interface with this valley fill? How does it recharge? How does it discharge? One of the main components of the proposed study is a water balance, where we find out how much this is recharging, how much are we pulling out, and of course, in the long run, we'd want to try to achieve a sustainable balance with how much water is coming in and how much water we're allowing out. And then again, we're looking for where the recharge is coming from, specifically in the valley. At this point, we're looking for input from all the stakeholders, whether it's Weber Basin, whether it's Morgan County, whether it's landowners, developers, the agricultural community, water right holders, or just the general public that lives around here. The initial draft proposal that we received from the UGS had a price tag of about $340,000. UGS is going to fund half of that. We've received some commitments from the Weber Basin to fund a fair portion of our portion of that also. And I've been working with representatives from Morgan County to see if there was any funding that Morgan County could make available to help us make this a priority study for us, help us get this done. We'd like to start this July, and if the proper funding is in place by July 1st, I think we could be ready for it. But it would be contingent upon funding from perhaps Morgan County, from Weber Basin, from UGS, and from the State Engineer's Office. And again, this is a year and a half study, $340,000. We should be finished with it by 2010, and have information to the county that the county can use in how they work their approvals and how they assess their water resources needs, how they assess the needs for. I see there's applications for a water board in Morgan County, and so again, we come here tonight looking for your input. We'll have a few short presentations by some of the people that are involved in the study already, and then we want to open up the floor to you for your questions and answers. If you can hold off perhaps until all the presentations are made, maybe we can answer a lot of your questions with the presentations, and then we'll take notes and we'll try to record your comments, and then perhaps we'll give another month to receive written comments or comments over email, and we can post these on our website so that everybody involved in this process can see all the comments and all the answers by some of the professionals involved as we fine tune this proposal and hopefully sign the agreement to do this study. Our first presenter tonight is Frank Quintana. Frank works for our Weber Basin regional office in Salt Lake that takes care of the Morgan Valley as well as the rest of the Weber River, and he's going to give his interpretation of some of the issues that we face in our office in dealing with water and water rights applications in this valley. Frank?
By the way, I'm going to be using this handout to talk about some of the issues dealing with the area. I've been with the division for about 17 years, and one of my responsibilities is to review applications. I don't know if it's on, but okay. Yeah, one of my responsibilities is to review applications and to recommend to the state engineer if we should approve or deny the applications. The final decision is his. But that responsibility allows me to review some of the letters we get from water users like yourself and to address phone calls from people who have water concerns. And lately, we've been getting questions like, is there enough water in this area to support the growth that we are experiencing in Morgan County? Another question we're getting is, what's going to be the impact of new change applications on existing wells when somebody drills a new well? Is it going to impair the existing wells in the area? Other questions we're getting is, if we are thinking about the impact of exchange applications in the area. And the last one that I read about is, some people want to know if we have, how much water we have available in the valley. The study that the UGS is going to be reporting about in about a year and a half or 2 years from now will address some of those questions. But I think that those questions that we get every day are valid. There's no doubt about that. But I think that we need to consider other issues to appreciate the nature of the challenge we're facing here, why we need to study, and probably answer some of the questions that we get. So tonight, I want to talk about three different issues. One is the policy, the Division of Water Rights policy for the area. That's one issue. Another issue I want to talk about is the amount of water the state engineer has approved in this area from wells. And the last one, I want to talk about two sections of the Utah Code that we use to review applications. Let's begin with the policy that we have in this area. Let's pretend that somebody wants to drill a well here. What that person needs to do is to get water that is within the basin. And today, we have three options to get water here. One is, if somebody, let's say a farmer, is willing to sell water to that person, the person may buy that water and go to the state engineer's office and file a change application. Another option is water companies, irrigation companies. If a company allows a shareholder to use the water company to drill a well, that's another possibility. The only problem a water user planning to drill a well in this area is that not a lot of people are selling water here. And we don't have a lot of companies. And some of them do not allow shareholders to change their water. So a lot of people select the other choice, which is they file exchange applications. They go to Weber Basin, they get a water contract, and then after that they go to the state engineer and file an exchange application. Now, we have to consider that if we continue to get an increase in water demand in the area, we're going to be getting more change applications and probably more exchange applications. So we need to study to see how to address the challenges we're going to have with all the changes and exchanges that are going to be seeking to change surface water to underground, or probably to change water from irrigation to municipality water, or water that's used for irrigation to domestic uses. We have to face those challenges, and the study is supposed to address some of those questions. Now, I want to tell you about the amount of water the state engineer has approved in this area through wells. And this is one of the pages in the handout. The state engineer has approved approximately 6,406 acre-feet of water from wells. So today, basically what that means is that the Division of Water Rights, or the state engineer's office, has given a check to the people in this area for that amount of water. And they can go to the bank and cash it every year. However, we need to know how much water we have available. So we're asking the Utah Geological Survey to do a favor, to go to the bank and to get us what the balance is. We want to know how much water we have available. And the intention of the study is to determine how much water we have available here and how many wells can we allow in the area eventually. So we have to get an idea what we refer to as the safe yield from the aquifer. And again, that's one of the questions we get, how much water we have available. So that's one of the purposes of the study. And again, like I was saying, the more exchange applications we get, the more change applications we get, we need to know what the answers to those questions are. Now, the last factor or issue I want to talk about is the two sections of the Utah Code. And before I proceed with that, I want you to keep in mind three things. One is interpretation. What do those two sections mean? Another thing that I want you to keep in mind is the term judicial. This is something that is created and decided in courts. And the other issue is the source of that information, the source of the two sections, which is the Utah State Legislature. Now, when we get an application, we try to determine exactly what's going to happen. Again, that's not possible. But we want to get an idea of what the impact is going to be on existing wells. We evaluate what the historical limitations are, so that way we do not enlarge the water right through the change application. Those are some of the issues. But eventually, we get to the point in which we have to address legal issues. And the Utah Code is like a manual we use to evaluate applications. And we have to consider that in every application that we get. There are two sections that I want to talk about. And again, they're right over here. And one is section 73-3-8. This section is applicable to change applications too. And that's because when you read the heading, it doesn't say that, but it's part of the information that we use to evaluate applications. And I want to basically read that as much as I can. And it says, it shall be the duty of the state engineer to approve an application if there is an appropriated water from the proposed source. In this case, in this area, people are going to be filing changes, change applications or exchanges. So maybe this is not a it's not going to be a big factor in evaluating a change application. But the other four are. I want to skip number two because that's the most important one. But condition three says that whatever an applicant is proposing should be physically and economically feasible, and it shouldn't be detrimental to the public welfare. And there's an exception there. There's another condition that says that the applicant has to have the financial ability to complete whatever the applicant is proposing. In a lot of cases, people want to drill a well, so that's possible. Another condition says that the applicant is filing the application in good faith and not for speculation or monopoly purposes. Now, the key condition in this case is number two. And this is the challenge that we have in the office interpreting exactly what that means. And it says the proposed use will not impair existing rights or interfere with the more beneficial use of water. A long time ago when I read that, I thought I had the answers to a lot of questions, but then I learned that I was mistaken. And to understand that, we need to go to section 73-3-3. And there's two subsections in there. And again, I want you to keep in mind, this is open to interpretation. It's really a challenge. We do this every day. And in a lot of cases, we have to seek legal advice from our attorneys when we review an application. But the first one, and this is subsection 2B, and it says, except as provided by section 73-330, a change may not be made if it impairs a vested water right without just compensation. When I read it, I always have questions about that, what they mean by compensation. Now, there's another one at the bottom, and this is probably one of the most important ones, and that's subsection 7A. Now, the section 73-330, which is an exception, I didn't give you a copy of that, and because I don't think that we need to address that. But this section or subsection of the code says the state engineer may not reject a permanent or temporary change application for the sole reason that the change would impair a vested water right. If otherwise proper, the state engineer may approve a permanent or temporary change application for part of the water involved or upon the condition that the applicant acquire the conflicting water right. Again, this is something that requires interpretation, and in a lot of cases we find ourselves between a rock and a hard place when it comes to issue a decision, and we deal with the issue of impairment and interference. I want to talk about a case that happened a few years ago, and that's the name of the case is at the is on the last page, Wayman versus Murray City Corporation. This was a case in which Murray City decided to apply for a well. And this is an area where they had flowing wells. Five water users protested the application. The application was approved by the state engineer. However, the case ended up in court and eventually made it to the Supreme Court. Now, I want to give you the highlights of that decision. And again, I'm not a lawyer, and I want you to bear with me because it's not easy to understand, you know, what the lawyers write about. But basically, the decision was that a water user has no absolute right to artesian pressure. So in this case, some of the wells did not flow anymore. And in that decision, it was concluded that every water user is responsible for employing reasonable and efficient ways to divert water in relation to other water users in an effort to avoid wasting water and to put the maximum amount of water possible to beneficial use. Now, I want to talk about it, you know, maybe what that means and what the decision said. But the decision said that if I have a well and then somebody else puts a well a few, you know, feet away from mine, I may expect some interference. They call it reasonable interference. However, they did not explain exactly what that meant. But I think, and when I talk to other people in the office, there's a possibility that the water user, in this case, where the well stopped flowing, could put a pump and get the water out of the well. Also, the case deals about the water level in wells. And again, this is a challenge for me to interpret that, but it kind of says that we cannot expect to keep the same water level in our wells. And there's a lot of reasons why. If we don't get enough rain, there's a possibility that the water level may go down. So we don't need another well to see that happening. However, the case ended up saying that if it becomes unreasonable for the water users, in this case, the five that we were talking about, that it became unreasonable for them, especially when the water level in the well fell to, you know, way, way too down for them to reasonably and efficiently withdraw water from the well, the Murray City was supposed to compensate, and the remedy was to provide water to the water users, to the five water users in this case, when they had a problem. But again, the challenge we have is that there's not a case in Utah that defines exactly what is meant by reasonable interference and what's unreasonable. So we don't know if it's 2 feet, 3 feet. And the reason why I'm saying this is because we get a lot of applications, and based on what we see here in the area, we're going to see more, and we're going to have to address decisions in the future. So again, like I was saying, in a lot of cases, we're not able to give you a satisfactory answer to the questions, and that's because we had to incorporate the legal issues and the approval. Now, I want to conclude with reviewing what I just said. The area in this, the policy in this area is close to new appropriations. I don't know if I forgot about to say that at the beginning. But people have to use water that's already available in this area to develop whatever they want to propose, like if they want to build a subdivision, anything that requires consumptive use in this area requires that you purchase, because that's normally what you need to do. You need to get water, existing water that already exists in here. And based on the information that we have, that's going to happen in the future. Now, in addition to that, I was saying that we have approved 6,406 acre-feet of water from wells. We need to determine how much water we have available here in the aquifer. We don't know if we exceeded the amount that we have available already. I don't think so. But we need to know that. We need to know that to guide the water resources in this area. And the last thing I was talking about is the Utah Code, the sections from the Utah Code. Again, this is legal matters. It's really hard to interpret. Again, we do it every day, and a lot of us have to go to the attorneys we have in the office to interpret those sections of the Utah Code. And based on what I see, and based on the challenge that the office faces, I think that we need to work together to see how we can face the challenge, the water challenge that this community is going to face in the future. Thanks.
Thanks, Frank. I think Frank did a great job at cutting through some of the difficult parts of the code and explaining it in plain English so that, that all of us can understand some of the challenges that he faces, that we face in the office, and that I'm sure you face working together as a community. Our next speaker is Mike Lowe from the Utah Geological Survey, and he'll explain the meat of the tomato here, what this our proposed water study is going to be about. Mike?
I'm Mike Lowe. I'm the manager for the groundwater and tailing ecology program with the Utah Geological Survey. Don't ask me any questions about tailing ecology. Basically, we've been asked by the Division of Water Rights, with input from Weaver Basin Water Conservancy District, to develop a study for the Morgan area here. And the study has two primary goals at this point, and that's to study the hydrogeology of the drainage basin as it pertains to the occurrence and flow of groundwater, with emphasis on delineating the thickness of the valley fill aquifer. That's the unconsolidated dirt material that's shown in yellow here that's in the central flat portion of the valley, and to also determine the water yielding characteristics of the fractured rock aquifers. That's the bedrock that surrounds the valley uplands. And the second part of the study is to develop a water budget for the drainage basin. This study is to take about 18 months to conduct, and after that time there'll be a few months of delay before the report comes out, but at the end of 18 months our constituents will have the answers they need to start making decisions. The drainage basin here shown on the map has an area of about 300 square miles, so it's a fairly large area. The northern boundary here is the drainage divide between Ogden Valley and Morgan Valley. The western margin here is the crest of the Wasatch Range, so it's the drainage basin divide between Morgan Valley and the Wasatch Front area. And this boundary here is what's called a hydrologic unit boundary. It's not a drainage divide because there are streams that are flowing across that boundary, but it's a hydrologic boundary that's commonly used to subdivide upper Weaver River Basin from the middle Weaver River Basin. There are three main perennial creeks in the area. You've got Cottonwood Creek here, you've got the Weaver River flowing in here, and you've got East Canyon Creek here, and the surface water flows out at the head of Weaver Canyon. So this is just where the canyon closes off. And of course, as you know, we've got a number of communities here, including Morgan and Mountain Green. Let's see if I'm far enough to do this. So as I mentioned, when we're looking at the hydrogeology, we're concerned about the valley fill aquifer, which is gravels and sands that are not very well consolidated at all. You can get them with a shovel and turn them over. And we're also concerned about the rock. Well, the valley fill material here is shown in the cream color, and the bedrock is shown in the various other colors. The bedrock along the western range here is the Precambrian forms of the canyon complex. It's a real hard rock of various types. It's among the oldest rocks that occur in Utah. And in these rainbow colors over here, we have some Precambrian, Paleozoic, and Cretaceous rocks, which are also hard and crystalline. In the lighter brown here, we have the tertiary Norwood tuff, which consists of a tuffaceous sandstone. Like tuffaceous, it's got some deposits from ancient volcanic activity mixed into it. This material is very landslide prone, and it has a spring flow capacity, so it's causing trouble with sidewalks and things in the various areas where it's found. And then in the darker brown there is the Cretaceous to Tertiary Wasatch Formation, which is a poorly consolidated conglomerate or conglomeratic sandstone. Now, the Wasatch Formation and the Norwood Cup, while some people do get water from wells out of them, they're not very good aquifers. So the better bedrock aquifers are these rocks we find in the central eastern part of the study area and along the western margin. And these rocks occur under these younger rocks, which are showing the brown color. And you'll see this break here. Another characteristic with these older rocks is they've gone through a lot of different structural stresses. They're highly broken up, they're faulted and fractured. And so it's really hard to predict what rock is underneath these areas that are covered by the tertiary formations. Now, with the Valley Fill Aquifer, you get better well yields when you have coarse grain material like sand and gravel, and worser yields if you're with fine grain material like silt and clay. Fortunately, in this area, most of this valley fill consists of coarse grain sand and gravel, and it tends to yield water very well. The wells that yield the best water are wells that have sediments that are sorted, they're all about the same size. With the bedrock aquifers, the water yield is determined by how many fractures or how many breaks in the rock your well intercepts. The water isn't stored in the rock itself like it is in the consolidated material. Well, in the past, most of the water supply for the area has come from these flatter areas, which are the valley fill aquifer. Water generally flows from the higher bedrock areas towards the center of the valley and then flows along the general direction of the streams. Now, as development is continuing and starting to move up a little bit onto the benches of the area, there's more demand for wells where you're going to be trying to get your water from bedrock. So as I mentioned, part of the hydrogeologic study that we're going to do is to try to determine the thickness of the valley fill material shown in yellow here. Some of you might have seen Jeanette Wallace and myself up here last year. We've been working in an area on water quality type studies for about the last 4 years. And so we've already taken a fairly good look at this valley, and we contoured the valley fill thickness based on its existing water well data. And what we found was that we had to label the map schematic isopach map of Oregon Valley because your water wells are along the roads where your houses are built, and in the central portions of the valley there aren't a lot of water wells. So we do know that up in the Mountain Green area here, the valley fill thickness is up to at least 350 feet thick. We think it's also fairly deep in the Morgan Valley here, and most of the other areas we have data that shows that in the central portion of the valley, it's at least 200 feet thick, but we can't constrain that. And I'll address how we're going to try to make a better map later on when I go over the scope of the study in detail. As I mentioned, most people have been getting their water out of the Valley Fill Aquifer, and we have sampled 66 wells in one spring through the valley here, and what we found is that you have really, really high quality water in the valley fill. The areas in green here have total dissolved solids of less than 500 milligrams per liter. Total dissolved solids is the residue that would be left over after you evaporate a liter of water. And so this is pristine quality groundwater. It's the best classification of groundwater under the UPA Water Quality Board's classification system. The little areas that you see in yellow here along Hardscrabble Creek, just to the south of Morgan and just to the west of Morgan here, are areas where the water is between 1,018 and 500 milligrams per liter. So you can see there are a few areas up there. The other issue we looked at was nitrate concentrations. in the study that we've already completed, and there have been a number of wells that have had relatively high nitrate levels. Out of the 66 wells that we sampled, there were 3 wells that exceeded the water quality standard for nitrate of 10 milligrams per liter. Most of the nitrate problems they once get up in the Hartsville Creek area here. And I don't think Janae's ready to say, you know, where she thinks the nitrate's going to come yet. The last major hydrogeologic study that was done in the area was by the U.S. Geological Survey by Joe Gates and others in 1984. So there's a lot of things that we can learn about the hydrogeology there since then. And what we're proposing to do in detail here is we're going to have a number of people working on this project. The first thing that we need to do is to compile any existing data that we already have. We have most of that. The next thing we need to do is we need to put together a good geologic map of the area. The geologic map I just showed, you can see that's kind of cartoonish. It's not very good for anything other than just the general description I gave. We're going to have John King, who's with our mapping program, come in and compile mapping for the valley here. It's going to be not quite the same quality of mapping for the extreme southern end of the valley here, but it's going to be 1 to 24,000 scale quality for the rest of the map. And it'll probably be published at 1 to 100,000 scale. We're going to construct a number of cross-sections across the drainage basin so that we can see what the geology is doing as you look at the geology at depth. A cross-section is like cutting a slice out of a piece of cake and looking at where the proxy is. We're going to construct a better IC map than we have here, and we're going to do that by having Kevin Thomas with our office come in and do a gravity survey. Now this is a survey which collects gravity data. The closer bedrock is to the ground surface underneath the valley fill here, the higher the gravity gradient. There's no explosions or bumpers or anything like that. It's a very non-disturbing type of a study. He's going to use this gravity data to fill in the gaps between where the water wells are, and we'll have a better handle of how thick the valley fill aquifer is throughout the valley. When you look at this grain size, hydraulic connectivities, which are related to grain size, transmissivities, which are related to grain size, thickness then gives you how much water is in storage. And then when you look at the slope of the water table in transmissivity, that tells you how fast water is flowing and how much water is flowing in the valley fill. We're going to come in and we're going to conduct geochemical sampling of water. For the valley fill, where we've already done our classification study, that's mainly going to be collecting samples for isotopes, which can help us tell the elevation that the water was originally recharged at and how old the water is. But we're also going to collect standard water quality samples for the bedrock. We don't have very much information on the bedrock well, so we need to build our database on water quality in that area. We're going to collect all of the aquifer test information that's available in the valley, and we're going to collect all of the well drillers' well yield tests that's available in the area, and we're going to compile that to get transmissivities for both the valley fill and the bedrock aquifers. And lastly, we're going to prepare a water budget for the Morgan Valley drainage basin. I'll go into that in a minute. And then after we've done all this work, we're going to assess the importance of structural features in the valley as to whether or not it's breaking the bedrock units up into separate compartments that have to be treated differently when you're looking at like how much water you can get out of those compartments. And we're also going to assess the potential for learning more about the geology underneath those tertiary units that don't yield water very well, assess whether or not drilling a test well will actually help us improve our understanding of that. Now, obviously, when you're looking at how much water you can develop, the water budget component is what mostly is going to do that. If you're going to, you know, appropriate water and manage water in a drainage basin based on the state soil concept, and in my opinion, that's the only way you can do it, you have to try to balance how much water is coming in with how much water is coming out. Ultimately, the water that's coming into the drainage basin is from precipitation within the drainage basin and water that's flowing in through East Canyon Creek and the Weber River. And you have to balance that with water that's leaving through the head of Weber Canyon and leaving from existing well pumping and leaving from evapotranspiration. Evapotranspiration is the use of water by plants and just to a smaller extent, just water that evaporates away. To do that, we're going to get, we're going to approach it in two ways. First of all, we're going to try to calculate the budget for the basin based on what we already know. We're going to basically quantify known discharge. And then second, we're going to use what's called a Manson-Eaton approach to look at precipitation using what's called PRISM data and try to figure out for the different geologic units how much of that water is seeping down into the fractured rock aquifer before it can be evaporated or be used by plants. And then we'll look at this better standard component, so water flowing out and water leaving by evapotranspiration. And Wally Sabach with our office is going to be the person that's in charge of this water budget study. And the person who's going to keep John King, Kevin Thomas, and Wally Sabach in line is going to be Jeanette Wallace, who's been doing work for the last 4 years. I think that if we conduct the study as outlined here, we're going to learn many of the questions that water rights needs to know in order to appropriate water and to manage the water up here. I guess the purpose of the hearing here is to also hear if there's some other things that could be done that haven't been considered at this point. That's the study as we've got outlined so far. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. I think we're very lucky to have Mike and the UGS as our sister agency or partner agency, because not only do they have money, they also have great expertise that we depend on quite a bit. So, and now we'll have a few words from another one of our partners, the Weber Basin Water Conservancy District, and Scott Paxman will speak for them tonight.
Thanks. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm Scott Paxman. I'm the Assistant General Manager for the District in charge of water supply, is my main responsibility. And I just appreciate water rights and UGS being involved in this study. It's been a concern for us for a number of years. I just want to really quickly explain how we go about appropriating water, especially in this valley. If someone wanted to drill a well up on the bench up here and they couldn't find an existing water right other than Weber Basin, so they'd come to Weber Basin to purchase an acre foot of water through a contract. We call that a replacement contract, because the acre foot of water pulled out of this well has to be released from one of our upstream reservoirs to replace that water. That in order makes the downstream water users whole. So it doesn't impact any of the downstream water users. So that's how we come into the picture. And there are I don't know how many water contracts that we have in the Morgan Valley, but it's in the hundreds. Last year was probably the most significant year we've had since our history. There's been a lot of activities, you know, in mountain green, up on the benches, and and even around Morgan City, large developments going in requiring additional water. And so our biggest reason for being involved in the study is that we didn't want to be out too far ahead of the curve, so that if we were selling a lot of water and water rights, Division of Water Rights came back and said, well, you took your contract into Division of Water Rights and they said, well, you know, we think it's done. We think there's not enough water here to get another acre foot of water. And we've already sold the contract and you know, it becomes difficult at that point. So we wanted to make sure that we were involved in the study so that we had the information that we needed to feel comfortable sitting down with Division of Water Rights, coming up with a figure, hopefully, a number that would indicate how much additional water could be developed in the area and could be sold in turn. So that's kind of our purpose. We're like Matt indicated, we're involved heavily financially in the process as well, and so we're giving our full support for the process. Let's see. Yeah, we're just, you know, I don't think we're going to come up with, maybe I'm speaking out of turn tonight, but I don't think we're going to come up with a specific absolute number that's available, but it's going to be general enough and hopefully specific enough to give us some general indications of what's available. And by that, we're going to be able to set some policies with our board to determine how much to sell. Now, just to let you know that our board, as of, I think it was our February board meeting, passed a policy that they would no longer sell replacement water contracts in the valley until this study was complete. There were a couple of contracts that were in the process before that policy was in place that we were, I'm not sure if they were completed or not, but there were a couple that were in the process. But other than that, there will not be any more contracts for New Basin approved until that is finalized and we have an understanding of how much water is available. That's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Scott. Now we'll open up the floor to anybody who has any questions or comments for our professionals or anything that you need us to consider in this study. You want to speak from the floor, that's fine. If you want to come up and speak at the microphone, you're certainly welcome to do that also. Sir, in the back.
I would like being here, but unless I misunderstood, one of those gentlemen did mention the doctrine of prior appropriations.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I read that off the internet, basically in a nutshell, says if the grandfathered wells get impacted negatively by newer wells, then the newer wells can be forced to shut down until the water table comes back up. Am I over exaggerating?
Frank, do you want to address that? Or
I think there was a case out in Chile where that was taken to court, but I don't remember right now.
Well, I don't have an answer for the question, but no, that's you know exactly what I know. But I haven't heard any case like that. Have you heard anything, Boyd?
Do you want me to address it?
You may know more because you addressed the whole state.
Let me address it first. I'm Boyd Clayton, Deputy State Engineer, and we are a prior appropriation state in Utah. With surface water, that's very clear. If you have water right downstream and you're not getting your share of water and there are water users upstream, we regulate and cut off the water users so you get your water. With groundwater, the situation's a little different because the way we look at groundwater is that it is kind of like a bathtub. It's a storage system. And so that the case that Frank was citing from Utah's Supreme Court, what the Supreme Court indicated was that in order to make the best use of Utah's water, then groundwater users were going to have to share that resource. And so if there's water available in the resource, you have a responsibility to go get it. If you unreasonably impact your neighbor, whatever unreasonable is, and that's the million-dollar question at this point, if you unreasonably impact your neighbor, he can sue you, or you need to make arrangements to compensate there. But we don't generally shut off groundwater users just because your water levels decline. We are in some valleys where we have over-appropriated. One of them is Pearl Enterprise area down in southwestern Utah that you may have heard about. They're very upset with us because the area was over-appropriated 50 years ago, and we're now finally coming to grips with that situation and cutting back appropriations in that valley in order to get the area back in balance. But in general, we don't cut off groundwater users by priority until we get in that situation.
Reappropriate the existing? Or, well, case in point, the water company I represent is 28 Connection. That's a well. And we have an electronic measuring device. And every month, we send that down the well, and it pops off the elevation for the water table. And we record that. So far, so good. But our pump is down, say, 200 feet. We hit water at 44 feet. So far, so good. But if down the road 10, 15 years, that water table drops to, say, 180 feet, 20 feet from our well for our pump, then what do we do?
You may be approaching unreasonable at that point. At some point, you're going to have to deepen your well to continue to get the water. And that's an expensive proposition.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to avoid, is unreasonable impacts.
Are you indicating that at that point to deepen the well is our little water company's responsibility?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the gray area in the Supreme Court's decision. They clearly indicated if it was unreasonable, then there was some compensation required. And so, and in most valleys, what we're trying to do is work with the water users and come to agreement among the water users what is unreasonable, and then we'll try to manage the valley based on that measure.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I didn't quit. Fortunate for us, we're kind of upstream, but we committed water to Layton, Ogden, Clearfield, Sunset, Syracuse, and all that. They do not have an impact if we should just put the plugs in here and start using the water. Oh, our water goes past Weaver River. Does it go somewhere?
Obviously there could be a huge impact downstream on that. And part of the study is to create a boundary condition at that downstream end, realizing that what we have to deliver to those to that area.
Do you have any idea what core proportion or commitment has already made to those people down there? They're growing just as fast as we are.
Offhand, I do not know. I don't know what that commitment is. But in our office, we have documentation of what water rights are approved down there and what kind of commitments we need to make with the Weaver River down in that area. And that's something that we will integrate with this study on to make sure we're balancing what we're delivering to that at that point is not overblown by what's being used up in this valley up here.
I add one more thing to that.
Please.
We're not appropriating new water here. The area is closed to new appropriations. What we're allowing is change applications, so you can change an existing water right, or you can get an exchange application, which means that Weaver Basin will release the amount of water that you're going to divert so that it flows down the river to supply those rights downstream. So we keep the system in balance because we're not taking new water out, we're replacing whatever you take out or changing the system.
Go ahead.
I happen to know somebody that went down to San Juan County or somewhere, bought water share, transported them back to, I'll tell you where, but let's say Morgan County. And turning in the usable water, and what he explained to me, could that be addressed?
No, that's not happening. We balance water rights by hydrologic system, so we will only allow change applications in the same area where the water would be affected.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Assume for this question that we determine that there's poodles of water to be sold that have not been tapped yet.
Okay.
If that's the case, are we looking at any possibility or prospect, it's really a question for Scott, that Weber Basin, for instance, is going to drill a large well and take that untapped water and ship it to the other side mm-hmm. of the canyon?
Like Glenn said, it is a fully appropriated basin. There is no additional water. So if we did that, we would have to release that amount of water out of one of our reservoirs.
Right, but then we would have to treat that water if there was no extra groundwater available in order to use it on our own land.
Great idea.
The really good answer is no, we're not going to ship it downstream.
Exactly.
I don't think there's a serious concern about that because, in reality, the groundwater resource here is more limited than all the surrounding valleys. So it makes no sense to try to pump groundwater from here out to the Wasatch Front. There's much better aquifers there. It makes no sense to do it to Ogden Valley. There's better aquifers there. In fact, that's the real concern here, is that the groundwater resource is quite limited once you get out away from the valley fill into the bedrock. I don't know how many of you have those kind of wells, but the well logs I see, they're very marginal producing wells.
My other question is just really procedural. How do you determine the recharge rate? I mean, you've mentioned the Weber River East Canyon Cottonwood, but we also have Jacob Creek, Peterson Creek, Dalton Creek, Smith Creek, Lion Creek, Deep Creek, and all these creeks that come off the backside. And if you watch those creeks, they may not have water at the bottom of them at a certain point in the year, but they have a pretty good flow at the top. That water is going somewhere.
Right.
So how do you determine
that? Except for the creeks that are going into the valley, so that's water coming in that's not from within the drainage basin, all of the water that ultimately comes through the drainage basin is false. It's precipitation in the mountains. And so when we do our water budget, basically what we're trying to do is to calculate how much that precipitation is going into the aquifers, either as seasonal flow on these smaller streams, or as seepage into the rock itself, or how much is this plant leaking as plant you.
And you can actually do that.
Lord. To be honest, I can't do it, but I have people who can.
It's somewhere between science and black magic.
You know, I can't see underground any better than anybody else here, but we are trained in what we're doing, and we're going to give the best answer we can. It may be that answer is more of an educated estimate than an exact calculation in some cases.
Okay. Now the million-dollar question. All the water from the top of Durst Mountain, from the head of Bowman Hollow and seeing everything drained into a natural cave and disappeared. Can we figure out where it goes?
There's complications.
That's what we've been doing that for a year.
Hopefully as we study the geology, we'll have an idea of which direction the cave system's heading. The caves usually develop over geologic time along fractures, and if we know what the fracture trends are, we can have a pretty good idea of what are the caves.
Because I could ask that 50 times a year. It'd be nice to have an answer.
You know, you find some of the issues, you know, they're sort of details. For instance, along the Wasatch Range here, the Wasatch Fault is an active fault zone, and normal faults in the valley here are much less active. That's good for hazards, right? So what that does is it causes any bedding that's in the range to actually dip towards Morgan Valley. So there's some water that may be flowing from the west side of the Wasatch in this direction. And so we do this study, we're going to try to answer those questions the best we can.
Sir, in the back.
A number of times grounds develop their secondary water systems, and those people retain one water right or 1 acre foot to irrigate those properties. Then we have a culinary water company, and we require them to get 1 acre foot from Weaver Basin. So that half-acre lot has 2 acre feet of water commit to it. Then we meter that water, so we know that those people are not using that full acre foot. Is there a reason why Weaver Basin has to sell those increments in 1 acre foot rather than a half acre or as parcel of the ground or smaller? What I'm saying is the situation right now requires a large parcel of ground. If we have smaller parcels, our water use goes down. So is there a reason why Weaver Basin is required to, with the state, to do it an acre foot, or can they do smaller parcel increments?
What we do with an exchange contract is we look at what the uses are going to be of the water. So, for instance, for inside domestic use, it requires 0.45 acre feet per year. And then we look at what irrigation use you're planning to use it for outside. So, for instance, if you have a secondary system that's providing the outside uses, you really only need 0.45 acre feet to make us happy.
We're requiring new membership in our culinary water system to get a full share. And it's gobbling up an important resource that we have, you know, a limited resource.
So, I'd say you could look at that, because it sounds like perhaps you're requiring more water than is necessary, more than we're requiring.
Yes,
this question is for Mike. On the water budget, are we going to be looking, are you going to look at subdividing, say, the alluvial aquifer into smaller increments, that the sustainable yield, the water budget for, say, the Cottonwood Creek leg of the alluvial aquifer, and then the trunk, is it going to be a whole over the whole alluvial aquifer in the area, you know, we have a sustainable yield of X?
I believe that in the end, we'll have one number for sustainable yield. But we will look at whether or not we can justify such a divided budget. You know, we can look at that, but in the end, I would bet that we'll probably get one number.
That's a follow-up question. Will the management scheme be offered, for example, I believe Weaver Basin, I live along the Weaver River, and I believe they release all the exchange water in the fall on time. Is that not the case?
That's not the case.
Okay. It's released periodically down during the stream so it has time to filter back to it.
Yeah, the river commissioner releases it down the system.
All right.
To satisfy rights that, because you're using it here, which is shortening the supply downstream, and so he's releasing it to fill those needs downstream.
Yes, sir.
Question for Mike. Also, on the agenda, mentioned time frame. I don't think it is. How long do you plan on doing your study?
The study's going to take a year and a half. If all the funding falls in place, we expect to start July 1. And then that's in December of 2009, we should be done with the study. We'll have answers for the people who are doing the planning to work with. And then it may take another 6 months after that to get a report that's published and available to the public.
Again.
Sorry, all the questions here. This one's for Scott. Once we have the report and it's not available to the public, but it's given to the principals, if it shows additional water, do you think it'll be Weaver Basin will then open additional contracts?
Yes, that's our intent. We feel like there's us along with additional water rights, if we feel comfortable with the amount of water available.
Yes, sir.
One of the water districts over in Summit County on shares in East Canyon Reservoir. Their long-range plan is to pump water from East Canyon Reservoir over to Summit County. Where the state engineer's office can deliver such a proposal, or how do you view that?
Well, I don't know if I say we're in favor of it. It'll be an application before us that will have to go through the process and we'll evaluate it. You need to recognize that the water in East Canyon Reservoir comes from Summit County. So they're not taking it to Summit County, they're recirculating it through Summit County. But obviously there would be a depletion from whatever uses they make of it, and that would all have to be evaluated, and they'd have to account for those new depletions before we approve such an application.
Bill?
In that 1984 study by the U.S. Geological Survey, Gates and others, did they do a water balance in there? I don't recall.
Gates and others did do a water balance, and there was another water balance that was also put together by a student by the name of Saxon. I don't know if I can remember what year that was. So there have been attempts at water budgets, and so we have something to start with. We also have stations on the various drains that provide us with information. But how you calculate the water budgets have changed over time, and this max eco method was not used by Gates.
I'm assuming that this water study for Morgan County isn't a new thing for the state. We've done this before. So have other counties taken advantage of these kind of studies, and if so, what is their success rate? How have they implemented that into their county?
We routinely do studies throughout the state as growth occurs and we're concerned about the extent of the resource, and we do studies. That's why the one was done in 84. And then as growth continues and we feel like we need additional data, we continue to do studies. We're just completing one in Cedar Valley in Utah County and in northern Utah County. We've got one that's just being completed in Tooele County. We did one down in Cedar City area a couple years ago. So they're going on all over the state, as we need, in order to appropriate water, we need that information to make the best decision. So I anticipate as the study is completed and we have additional information, we'll want to meet with you again and start to understand how you want to develop. The reality is we're responsible to appropriate the water, but we're not responsible for your land planning policy. And so as a county, you need to decide how you want to grow. Obviously, one of our concerns is if you're going to continue to put individual wells for all the houses in this area, you're all going to have individual septic systems, that may not be a very desirable system over time. And so one of the things you need to start thinking about is at what point do we want to centralize our water systems? Because it's both economically advantageous and for health reasons to make it. So those are all things you need to be thinking about.
When you say water systems, are you talking about sewage and culinary type water?
Yeah, that's what I suggest. If you're going to have higher growth densities, you'll probably want to look at that.
Is this solely a water quantity study, or does it include water quality? And if so, because I've always understood when Lake Bonneville was here, it lays left the clay there, so deep under the ground, fairly impermeable. And every time you drill a well, you're creating a channel that communicates surface water to the underground aquifer. And is that something you're going to look at as the advisability of wells versus water systems?
When you drill a well, then we require a seal, and that's the reason for it, is so that water from the surface doesn't move down into the aquifer and contaminate the aquifer. And so we hope and we believe that wells are being constructed reliably so that that will be contamination that way isn't a problem. But obviously, the more holes you perforate, the more chance there is that you're going to have one that's going to have a seal problem. And so that's one reason that over time, if you're going to have those densities, I'd look at centralizing wells, if it was me. And that's certainly something you ought to think about. As for the water study, could you let Mike respond to that, although I think everyone's
concerned. We are collecting some water quality data, mainly, you know, focusing on the bedrock. But this is not a water quality study per se. Water rights here is not in the business of regulating septic tanks. That's not their purview. When we were here last year, there was talk about trying to get the use of additional water quality to fund the septic tank density study. I don't think that that's been followed up on.
Yes, sir.
So is that water, the samples you come to from my well, is that going to be an ongoing thing, or have you pretty much completed what you want to do?
We sampled your well twice. The second time might have been the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. But yeah, we're done with that study, and it'll probably end up being published along with the work we're doing as part of the study, but they're really two separate studies. We just want to put everything together so you can get one report and all the things.
Are there any other questions? Last chance. We certainly appreciate your participation and your presence at this meeting. It's encouraging to see this many people show up, and we hope we can encourage Morgan County to participate with our study with us, since they have such a vested interest in this. And in the end, this is your study, because this is your valley, this is your county, and we appreciate your interest on this. Thanks for coming.
Hey, Matt.
That's right.
Attendance sheet.
Oh yes. If we still have the attendance sheet, if we could get that back, we'll be accepting comments for a month from today. You can send to the Division of Water Rights, and the proceedings will be on our webpage.
Sorry,
I lost it.
That's okay.
Here it is.
All right.
Oh, nice.
Back. Right. Next.